Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio farmers are grappling with the worst weather-related planting season on record, with more than 1 in 7 acres of land covered by the federal crop insurance program unplanted because of record rainfall. But Ohio isn't alone. Farmers across the Midwest have struggled with how to balance the equation of when, how, or even if to plant their crops this year. Even the farmers who are insured for the crisis are barely breaking even. And then there's climate change. And then there's trade wars. We're talking about the problems, how farmers are coping, and the future. Joe Corneli is Senior Director of Corporate Communications for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Ann. Glad to be back.
Columbus Dispatch reporter Beth Berger covers agriculture. Welcome.
Thank you.
Did I pronounce your name right?
You did.
Okay, good. How big, I mean, how do you, Beth, when you're writing about it, how do you describe it to your readers how big this problem is this year?
You know, I don't have an ag background personally, so I try to make calls and keep tabs and sources with a couple of farmers throughout the area.
Who are experts, right? Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm lucky that when the delayed planning started back in June, that I was starting to get calls and people were getting worried. And that's when I started following this. And I actually marked the calendar for yesterday from when I knew this data was going to be from released from USDA, because I knew it was going to be jaw-dropping. But yeah, no, it is hard to describe to people, because it does have a huge impact. And I think a lot of researchers like Ben Brown at OSU were proven right. They were saying initially months ago, Ohio is one of the worst hit places, and the numbers really bear it out to show that.
And it's not just worst hit, it's worst hit ever.
Oh, absolutely. I've been doing this for 40-some years as a professional and grew up around agriculture. And believe it or not, there's some people out there that are actually older than I am. And no one has ever been through anything like this. I mean, we've had years where there were some areas that got planted very late. But I think most farmers will tell you, we always get a crop in. We always manage to do it. And for a lot of guys this year, it didn't happen.
It was just what was it about the rain? Was it the intensity of the rains? Was it the amount of precipitation itself? Was it the constance of it, Beth?
What we've seen, and you know, we have had, and it's not just Ohio. I mean, it's across the country in most places, is an unprecedented amount of rainfall. And if you do talk to farmers, and I'm sure Joe would probably agree with me, is, you know, it's, you do have places where there is standing water in fields because of these heavy rain events, where you get a large amount of rain in a short amount of time period. But you also have rain every few days like that. So it never completely dries. The soil never completely dries out. It might look dry on top, but if you start to go down just a little bit where you would need to obviously plant, then, you know, it's too wet to have a healthy crop. And so even the farmers that I've spoken to who have managed to plant corn and soybeans this year, the root systems on these plants aren't nearly as healthy as they would have been, you know, other seasons.
And that means they're going to have a hard time withstanding the dry spell.
Yeah, we're ironically, we need rain this year at this time in most areas of the state, probably half the state exceedingly dry. And Beth's absolutely right. We put the crop in, and the crop that we did get planted went in under just really poor conditions. Farmers call it mudding it in. They shouldn't be out there. They know they shouldn't be, but it's either put it in or it's not going to get in at all. And so just as Beth described, the crop develops more slowly. It doesn't get as strong as it needs to be, and then that impacts its ability to do well when the weather might stress it later on. So, yeah, it's insult to injury. Too much rain at the wrong time and not enough rain at the wrong time.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You know, Ohio's biggest industry is agriculture, has been kind of forever. But this year it's been hit the hardest among the compared to every state in the United States when it comes to late planting or no planting at all. About 1.5 million acres of farmland in Ohio went unplanted this year. 1 in 7 acres of land covered by plant insurance went unplanted this year. It's a catastrophe for farmers, but it's only 1 year. My guest is Joe Corneli. He's Senior Director for Corporate Communications at the Ohio Farm Bureau, and also Beth Berger, Columbus Dispatch. She covers environment, science, and agriculture. Joe, it is only 1 year, so why are we worried?
Well, it's only 1 year, but part of the challenge is economically, it's a part of a 5, 6, 7 year period where we have seen tremendous price declines. You go back to 2012, 2013, farmers were making money. Since then, it's been a struggle. And each year that you have to draw down on your equity as opposed to making your profits from the market. So now we're looking at a year where we're not going to have much crop. And for a variety of factors that you mentioned, including trade disputes and such, the prices are down. So we're heading into or in the midst of a period where the economy of agriculture has not been good. And then all of a sudden we get this sucker punch of not having any grain and lower prices all at the same time. Most farmers, and I'm always cautious about, you know, generalizing for everybody,
right.
But I think most farmers, with the help of crop insurance, with their experience as risk mitigators, they're probably going to survive this year. Not all, but most will. But if we have another year like this next year or the year thereafter, I don't want to say we're going to look at the farm crisis years of the early and mid 80s, but it's going to get serious. It's already serious in certain sectors, dairy in particular, but we've got a lot of farm families that we're going to have to see some return to normalcy next year.
What other predictions, Beth Berger, as far as the future goes with the weather? With the climate, maybe I should say.
Sure. It's funny. I spoke to Al Gore a few months ago covering an event. And, of course, he's been preaching about climate change and climate crisis for years. And I asked him if he was getting a different reaction. And he told me that Mother Nature is weighing in on the debate. And so I think that's going to be interesting when you talk to researchers. I mean, we are seeing more rain. And when it comes to farming, I mean, that has some huge implications. The temperatures are also growing warmer, so there's more pest pressure.
They're predicting that Ohio will be similar to what Arkansas is now, will be Ohio in 10 to 20 years.
That's correct, yes. It's funny, Joe and I have had lots of conversations about the climate change because I actually was covering environment before I started also covering agriculture. And a story I did about a year ago is I went to Northwest Ohio and I spoke to a number of farmers and asked them what their thoughts were on climate change. And I mean, it would probably be a great follow-up for us to try to go around and talk to farmers after this season, this year, and say, hey, you know, how do you feel now about it? Has it changed your belief on it? And, you know, we might get some of the same answers we did a year ago where people say, this is just a bad year. It's a fluke. But the science is showing that we're in for a rough ride in terms of, you know, how the climate is going to affect things.
If things stay the same, if they keep doing what they've been doing all along. I remember I lived in Arizona 1 year in Phoenix, and they said it was the 100-year flood, and next year it was the 200-year flood, and then I moved. but farmers can't do that. Joe Corneli, excuse me, is this affecting, when you talk about some farmers not making it, is that more likely to be smaller farmers, family farmers that aren't going to make it versus the big corporate, you know, farmers with lots of resources and capital?
Okay, you're going to give me the opportunity to talk about one of my pet peeves. The concept that farming is corporate is, I think it's largely a fallacy. 98% of agriculture, of farms in Ohio and across the nation are family owned. Now, they are large. They may be organized as a corporation, but grandpa's the chairman of the board and the mom is the CEO. But the what you're probably likely to see are some of the larger farmers who maybe just got into the business during the last 6 or 8 or 10 years when things were going great guns. And if they made the assumption that it was that corn was always going to be $7 or $8 and interest rates were always going to be under 2%, they're going to get caught by surprise. And so those are the ones that I'm most worried about, are the ones who expanded rapidly during the really good times. And they're all ages, but they tend to be some of the younger alpha male type farmers is what I've heard many economists describe them as. So me personally, those are some that I'm looking at. I'll tell you another part of this that is a bit concerning. Many farmers, the majority of farmers in Ohio, have off-farm jobs. And as long as the general economy is okay and you can still get your paycheck from the factory or the office where you work or the radio station where you work, those farm families are going to be okay. But if we continue to see these low commodity prices and a downturn in the general economy, I think that's when we're going to see an impact on farming, because you don't have the off-farm job to subsidize your loan payments on the 300 or 400 acres you're farming.
You know, farmers are supposed to be or have to be kind of experts at mitigating risk. As you mentioned, there was a phrase you used a little earlier, Joe Cornelli. But the risk now isn't just the weather, although that's what's hurting so hard this year. There's so many other risks now. There's so many other unknowns, right, Beth Berger? I mean, are farmers talking to you about that?
We've seen some of that, and I think farmers are incredibly smart, hardworking people. I was lucky to be invited into a meeting when they were trying to decide to plant. There was about a dozen of them, and I went out to Plain City and sat in a conference room, and they had—
And they talked to each other about it.
They talked to each other about it and asked for advice. They had reps from some of the seed companies, because you're trying to decide, do I switch out the seed that I have? Because you make those decisions to purchase back probably in December during the wintertime.
Right.
Things like that. So, I mean, they are talking to each other, trying to decide the best course of action. And like you mentioned, the alpha farmers, so to speak. I mean, there are natural leaders in these communities who are experienced and who are trying to lead the way and keep everyone calm.
Ripple effects, Joe Cornelli. We just talked about the seed companies, for instance. What does this portend for you know, other interests when it comes to farming?
So specific to agriculture, I have the seed company, the fertilizer dealer, the fuel salesperson, the equipment dealer, right, and so on down the line.
It's a big long-term investment of capital improvement.
It is. And so if your customers are hurting, you are going to be hurting. And so I'm sure there have been a lot of talks between farmers and their seed company about, can I take this seed back, or can I swap it out, or, you know, some of the inputs, can they be stored? And then comes, how do I pay for it? So those are some of the ripple effects. But more broadly, 1 in 8 jobs in Ohio is somehow tied to agriculture. And so when the farm family is hurting and they don't have the kind of income that they might normally have, rural economies are going to feel it pretty rapidly. We're going to see, farmers, they're not going to be able to buy that new pickup truck that maybe they've been planning to buy for a couple of years. We may not be able to remodel the kitchen. You may not be able to put as much money in the collection plate on Sunday. So those local economies are going to feel this economic consequences, as well as the farm families themselves.
Are you concerned that with whatever failures occur this year because of circumstances, that the land will be lost to farming?
Typically, it isn't. With the downturn in the farm economy now, it may not be as it normally is, but usually what happens when a farmer stops farming, somebody else takes over the land. And so the farmer who has some acreage next door, she may buy that farm property. Another piece of this, too, is that probably on the order of half of the land that we farm in Ohio isn't owned by the farmer.
Right.
It's someone whose grandpa farmed. They didn't want to get in it, but they inherited the farm, so they rent it out or they lease it out to the local farmer. So I don't really see this as being a transfer of farmland to other uses. But more than likely, it will be transferred to somebody else who's going to take over that ground and farm it.
So, Beth Berger, before I let you go, what's your next story on this? How do you follow this story as you move ahead?
Well, this was just one set of data that was released from USDA, and there's going to be periodic releases all the way through January, and I think it'll probably be monthly, if I'm correct. So one of the things we're going to be looking at, just like we discussed earlier, is the health of these crops that were planted. How many of those failed and what the condition is. USDA releases a crop condition report every Monday, and I check it every week. It talks about how many working days farmers were able to get out due to the weather. It also talks about what the condition of the current crop is. And historically, normally we would have good or excellent corn right now. However, this year, I mean, we have a huge percentage that's considered fair. So that's what I'm going to be looking at in the coming weeks to see how that fares. This story obviously was focused on how many people just chose not to plant anything, period, because they were unable to. One of the editors, and Joe might be able to speak to this, asked me, why should people care? I mean, they're getting money even though they didn't plant. And you might be able to speak
to
that.
Well, they make a profit, right?
Well, they are getting some help from the government in many cases. There's some disaster assistance. There's crop insurance that they helped pay for. So, yeah, there is some money coming in, but it's not enough to make a profit. Typically, and I hate to throw out any number, but 30-40% of what you would expect to earn from your crops is what you might get from an insurance payment. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But in many cases, it's not even enough to break even. So the farmer is going to go even further in the hole, not as much as if they didn't have insurance, but it'll be yet another year of losses for the farmers.
And for those who did plant and their crops fail, they don't get that insurance.
Well,
they get other insurance?
When you buy crop insurance, there's a variety of coverages that deals with yield, price, whether or not you got it planted and such. And farmers have options on what level of insurance to buy. When you insure your car, you could choose your deductible kind of a thing. So that applies to crop insurance as well. But, there will be some money coming in, but it's not going to be enough to make farmers whole this year.
Well, Beth Berger, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Beth Berger is a Columbus Dispatch reporter. She covers agriculture. Coming up, we're going to hear from an Ohio farmer out of Northwest Ohio and about his plight as it stands now and what he thinks about the current situation when it comes to farming in Ohio. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio farmers suffered the worst planting season on record this spring, leaving roughly 1.5 million acres of land fallow. Even farmers with insurance are barely breaking even. Record rain is the problem. Still with us is Joe Cornelli, Senior Director of Corporate Communications for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Nathan Eckel farms in Wood County in Northwest Ohio, where he grows soybeans, corn, wheat, and other crops. He also sits on the board of directors for the Ohio Soybean Council. We welcome him to the show. Welcome, Nathan Eckel.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
You're in Northwest Ohio. It's one of the hardest hit areas this season, all the way across, you know, the whole region. How has it affected your farm?
Well, we set ourselves up. We had goals. You know, we've got a livestock operation as well, with my two brothers and myself. And, our main goal when we were delayed planting was just to get enough. We feed a lot of corn silage and forages to these cattle here at our feedlot. Our main goal first was to make sure that we had enough, forages planted, corn silage, and that planted for our livestock so we could feed those animals. And we got that done. We were fortunate enough. We were about 65% planted this year, and which is better than most in this area. I think here in Wood County, they just came out with prevent plant acres of around 120,000 acres in Wood County, which I think is some of the largest in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes in pockets. There's areas that are better than others. My road right here, you really have to struggle to find a field of corn planted in Wood County. My road right here, there's probably about the most corn planted in Wood County out of anywhere.
So you're pretty good, but you must be rubbing elbows with farmers who are struggling.
Yes, there's a lot of farmers in our area that planted nothing, maybe got the planter out of the barn for one field. Just to see what it was like, maybe planted 40 or 60 acres of soybeans, but very little corn planted. So now the struggle right now is how do we keep these weeds at bay? A lot of tillage work going on right now. The last two falls have been historically wet as well.
Mm-hmm.
So not a lot of fall tillage work. Deep tillage has not been done in the last two falls. So there's a lot of guys taking advantage of that right now and just trying to maintain these weeds, keeping these weeds down.
You have to invest in overplanting as well, right, over the winter?
Well, we've got our wheat. We're planning on planting roughly 400 acres of wheat this year. And right now it's about cash flow. I caught the end of what Joe was talking about earlier. About money and yeah, it's about cash flow. So how do we get, we're going to have this crop insurance money coming in for us here right now. But how do we maintain that cash flow so that we can continue to pay bills throughout the next year? You know, this just isn't a 1 year problem. We're going to struggle to try and maintain that cash flow, and wheat's one way to do that. It's not as profitable as corn and soybeans, but we're going to maintain being able to keep the money flowing through the organization here.
When you're making the decision about what to put in and what to not put in, how much does the crop insurance play into that equation?
The crop insurance, there's so many factors involved. On our farm, we run revenue protection. So it basically protects a percentage of my revenue, either 80 to 85%. Of that coverage. Now, out of that, we still have to pay a premium on top of that. It factors in quite a bit, especially, what we're going to plant, what that premium cost is going to be. And there's factors involved in that just with what the price is, with the price discovery period in February. It changes from year to year. And then also with the farm bill, what's subsidized by the government as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You've probably heard about the wet weather this spring. It's affected farmers more than anyone, with 1.5 million acres in the state of Ohio gone unplanted, the worst in the country. My guest, you just heard from Nathan Eckel. He's a soybean farmer in Northwest Ohio and sits on the board of directors for the Ohio Soybean Council. Also with us, Joe Corneli, Senior Director of Corporate Communications for the Ohio Farm Bureau. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joe Corneli, what's the message out here for everyday people who they don't farm, they don't know a farmer, and they're still going to go to the store, and there's going to be rack after rack of bread and corn, and although I will say there's not as much sweet corn, that's for sure, and I don't think it's coming from Ohio right now, but it's not affecting people's everyday lives.
So I guess the message is, when you hear Ann Fisher talking about this, or you see it covered on your local TV station, or you read about it when Beth Berger writes about it in the Columbus Dispatch, that's probably, for most people, about the only time they'll think about the fact that you can walk into the grocery store at any time of day in just about any city in America, and the food just is magically there. We are very disconnected in many cases from the concept of what it takes to produce our food. Now, the flip side of that is a lot of folks are getting more in touch with their food. They want to know the story behind every bite on their fork.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us, we want to go to the grocery store. We want to get something that's nutritious and tasty at an affordable price. And we never even have to think about everything that went in there to fill up those shelves at Kroger or Giant Eagle.
And Nathan Echol, what effect has that, this growing disconnection with our food sources? Although, as Joe Cornelius pointed out, there's a pocket of people who are intensely interested in where their food comes from, but more likely than not, most people aren't. They're too busy. They're too tired. What does that, how do you feel about that? And how does that affect farmers in these down years and maybe these down cycles?
Well, and I think it's important to note it's not just food. You know, our soybeans here in Wood County, we don't just produce food as farmers. We produce, we're producing replacements for petroleum products. Our biodiesel that I think the Ohio State University is using in their buses, you know, that comes from our soybeans here in Ohio. And along with that, there's a lot of products that people don't realize. With our corn that we produce, the ethanol industry here, and then in retrospect, along with that ethanol, we use what they call DDGs out of the ethanol plants to feed our cattle here on our feedlot.
What are DDGs?
So it's spent grain. Okay. After they pull the ethanol off the corn, mm-hmm. And they produce that ethanol, there's that biomass. That's left over from producing it, the spent grain.
Okay.
And we use that in our livestock operation to feed our cattle. Now, that's doubled in price just in the last 2 months, so that's why we're also trying to figure out other ways, other forages to feed our, to get that dry matter into our ration here. So I think it's important for people to know it's not just the food in your grocery stores. There's a lot of other products that the oil from these soybeans, like I said, the ink on your newspaper. I'm mm-hmm. sure the Columbus Dispatch uses a bio ink that uses soybean oil. The kids' textbooks, biodiesel, ethanol, a lot of different things. It's not just food. It's a broad spectrum of things that we use agricultural products for.
And I'm glad you brought up the issue of ethanol, because from what I read in the paper today, another problem is that the U.S. government has now allowed 31 oil refineries to go without blending ethanol into fossil fuels, again, further hurting the demand for corn and probably further depleting that reuse of the biofuel or increasing the cost for that fuel for your livestock.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how much demand ethanol is brought to the agricultural industry, mm-hmm. especially for corn. We rely on that heavily. I think just in my immediate area, within about an hour drive, there's at least three ethanol plants here in Northwest Ohio. And then we've got the ports up here in Toledo, Anderson's ADM. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Modelo up there that bring in wheat and things like that. Mm-hmm. In for your bakery type products. So there's a lot of end users right here in Northwest Ohio that are going to suffer because of the low production in this area.
Let's see, Stephanie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, I have a question about food security and the fact that China owns one-fifth of Ohio's farmland, and the state of Ohio has no restrictions on how much farmland foreign governments can own.
Hmm. Joe Cornelius, well, let's see. Joe Cornelius, is that strike a tone with you?
So, Stephanie, I don't dispute your number. I don't know what the number is. I can say that the trend is towards foreign ownership of farmland in America. And I think that's something that the agricultural community is paying attention to. I don't think we see it as a crisis yet, but we're pretty good at looking down the road and seeing what might be a potential problem. I think most of us would agree that we'd prefer to keep our farming assets in the hands of Americans. And so when we can develop policies that make farming profitable, we're very proud of the fact that we farm to feed the world. We're very proud of the fact that we're trying to limit our environmental footprint, but we also have to make money. And the more profitable we could make it for American farmers, the less likelihood we're probably going to have to see somebody from that we might personally or if there's an economic reason, might not necessarily want owning our land.
Yeah. And Nathan Eckel, you have some thoughts about that?
Well, personally, we've got a lot of ties back many, many years. I'm still farming a farm that my father farmed, the first farm he ever cash rented from somebody. Before that, it was primarily what we owned, was what we farmed. We do not farm for anybody on our land that is foreign at all. We've got a lot of these relationships with these landowners that go back 40 to 50 years, and it just keeps getting passed down. We are seeing a little of that disconnect. Families, as land taxes go up, there's just a lot of families feel that there's not enough money in the kitty for them to continue to own that land. And we've been fortunate in the economy that we had back in, you know, 2009 to about 2012. We were able to buy a few farms back then. But primarily, we've still got those relationships that we've had for 30 or 40 years on our farm.
There are predictions from prognosticators, agriculture prognosticators across the country that we're heading into a time of climate change, and that it's going to hit Ohio very hard. It's going to very much change what Ohio is capable of producing over time. And Nathan Eckel, I'm wondering how you're looking at those predictions and how you plan for them.
You know, I think it's important for farmers, and this is what we're trying to do on our farm. And my father had the foresight to diversify our operation with our cattle operation. And I think that's important for farmers. We've got to be able to diversify and be able to adapt to change. My father passed away about 10 years ago, and the things that he did on our farm back then are very much different from what we do today, from tillage practices to technology. And I think farmers are quick to change. We can adapt to change very easily, and I think, you know, we just have to have those markets in place to be able to stay diversified. And the market dictates what we produce here. You know, we listen to what the consumer wants and what the market demands, and that's what we're going to produce here.
And then trade wars, the ongoing unknowns regarding the trade wars. Is it particularly when it comes to soybeans, Nathan Eckel, what's the impact been for you?
I talked to a gentleman here the other day that or back at the state fair, said we should be trading roughly, if the China piece wasn't there, if the trade war wasn't there, we should be trading soybeans basically around $10 right now. So I think today, you know, in the last couple of days, we've knocked 40 or 50 cents off our price here just recently. It makes a huge impact, especially on what we're going to plan. Our plans change daily as to what we're going to plant next year, just based upon that. And we're always looking for different market cues to, do we need to find a specialty crop? Mm-hmm. Do we need to find something else to produce here, to maintain our profitability here on our farm? And it weighs heavy on your mind. But I think once again, back to what I said before, we're very adapt to change and we can change pretty quickly. We've got the tooling here in our operation. We can do just about anything we want to do, but we need to. The market needs to is going to dictate what we do here.
And I would add too that as Nathan and farmers like him adapt to the change around them, they've got some pretty important partners. The College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences here at Ohio State and land-grant colleges across the nation. They're doing research into seeds that will give Nathan crops that are more tolerant to if the weather continues to warm and we continue to have excessive rainfall events. They're going to help him have seeds that can tolerate those kind of conditions more. They're going to help develop machinery that will allow Nathan and other farmers to get their work done in a shorter window. That's one of the things problems we're having. We used to have weeks and weeks and weeks to get the crop in, and that seems to be shrinking a lot. So research at universities like Ohio State and others, providing those tools so that Nathan and other farmers can continue to adapt as the world changes around them.
Nathan Eckel, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it too, Ann. Thank you very much.
You bet. Nathan Eckel, he's a soybean farmer in Northwest Ohio. He sits on the board of directors for the Ohio Soybean Council. Also with me today, Joe Cornelli. He is a senior director of corporate communications for the Ohio Farm Bureau. He'll stay with me. Coming up, we're going to be looking ahead to what is predicted for the future and how that could affect farmers. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio ranked first in the country for the number of farmers who will collect taxpayer-subsidized so-called prevented planting insurance on acres left fallow this year. In all, roughly 1.5 million acres went unplanted across the state because of an unusually wet spring. Still with us is Joe Cornelli. He's Senior Director of Corporate Communications for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Ann Dorrance is a professor of plant pathology at Ohio State in the College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Studies. She co-leads a task force that is helping farmers through this crisis. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
How did the task force form? Helping them through the crisis, what does that mean?
Well, Dean Kress called several of us together to help facilitate getting the answers out. This spring, I think a lot of farmers are still feeling the shock of it, but we were all changing, including researchers, changing decisions constantly throughout the season. For an example, corn was delivered to the farms in April to be planted. It was then taken back to the dealers because the maturity groups weren't right. New corn was delivered that had shorter days, and then that was turned back. And then what do you do with it because you had missed the planting date? So farmers have had to constantly change decisions, keep looking at all the different insurance options, other types of payments, what do they grow? So all of those decisions need to be informed. And so with my colleagues, some great colleagues here at Ohio State, we've been able to help farmers work through these decisions based on what was known at the time. Policies changed through the spring. So corn was planted right now as a cover crop, can actually be used as a silage later in the season. Okay. So working with policymakers to be able to change and change some of these decisions. Simple things like finding out if soybeans could actually be used as a forage. The answer is no if it was treated with some of the new seed treatments. Mm. So all of these types of things, just we needed to have people to go into the companies with their contacts, with policymakers, to help work through some of these decisions that farmers had to make.
The farmer we had on earlier, Nathan Eckel from Northwest Ohio, mentioned he's doing pretty well. I mean, their acreage, much of it got planted and they were lucky. But he talked about pockets. You know, it's actual pockets are affected more than others. And I'm wondering how you grapple with something that is sweeping, but in a pocket kind of a way and not across great swaths as people might be visualizing this.
Well, that's farming in Ohio. I think one of the things that we often say, you know, it'll rain on the other side of the field, but not on your, but not on the other side of the row, but not on your field. Or it'll drop 3 inches over there, but you needed it someplace else. That's really very common here. I have research plots, as many of my colleagues do around the state. One place will get 5 inches of rain and another one will only get an eighth of an inch. So that is one of the big challenges of farming in Ohio. I personally can attest and confirm what he said.
and it's always been a challenge. Is it a greater challenge now when you have a spring like we had?
This has been the most challenging spring of my career, I think. Many, in addition to the farmers, many of us have lost research projects just because we couldn't get planted, or what did get planted just got another 3 or 4 inches of rain and flooded out. So we're all feeling the effects of Mother Nature this year.
And then there's the issue of the future and climate change. We've kind of touched on that a little bit already this hour. I'm wondering to what extent farmers are considering what the long-term impacts are going to be of the changes.
Well, this year is going to have long-term impacts throughout the whole ag chain. It's the farmers. It's also the retailers. And then it also goes into the suppliers that are trying to move everything from vegetables to grain into where we need it. We do have an amazing ag system. I think that's one of the things I've become aware through this task force of really how the infrastructure is there to kind of help adjust for some of these outbreaks, especially when it occurs in pockets. But this is a pretty deep, deep hole we're in at the moment. Some of the things at Ohio State, we've had many of my colleagues have kind of dropped everything to start looking at. We've got a shortage of feed coming into the summer and winter months because we also lost, not only was it the grain, but we also lost all the first cutting of hay. We also, with that polar vortex, also lost a lot of our alfalfa. So immediately through a team of researchers that we have here with Diane Shoemaker, Mark Schultz, Rory Lewandowski, and Bill Weiss that cover some of this, they're looking at alternative feeds and forages for our animal, for our animals that are grown and raised in the state. We also have other groups that are now looking at some of these cover crops because in the area of Northwest Ohio, when all those unplanted acres, we now are faced with a tremendous weed pressure. Weeds just mean more inputs. So trying to keep those weeds under control with our team of Mark Laux and then all of the group that deals with cover crops, looking at whole new different types of crops that some people have never worked with before. So we've really kind of dropped everything to kind of help get people through this area because this is going to affect us. I don't know if you've talked with our climatologist, Aaron Wilson, but the long-term trend, this is the beginning of a trend. And so we only had maybe half a day to plant in the month of June, which is too late for many of our crops. So how many days are we going to have next year and what types of crops are we going to need? And we've already got people at Ohio State that have begun to look at those other crops.
It's not like the season's just shifting. It's shrinking. Does that
mean?
I'm hearing
you say that, but I'm really hoping for a long fall.
What could happen this season that going forward that could help?
We need a long fall.
Okay.
A lot of the corn that was planted late, if that can get to black layer, which is a period of corn growth staging, which means that they can harvest it and dry it down.
Okay.
And we can still potentially get that grain. If we can get that grain, then our shortages will be much less than what we're predicting. If we get an early frost, that's going to change everything. Then the soybeans that were planted late won't make enough seed. The pods won't fill out. We won't have enough corn. So that's kind of the issue. We also won't get another cutting of hay. If we could get another cutting of hay, then that's going to help all the bedding and all the feed go through the winter.
There's already been a hay shortage, hasn't there?
There's already been a serious hay shortage and bedding shortage.
Joe Cornelli, I wanted you to kind of chime in here a little bit about how the idea, how farmers talk to each other, how they talk to the seed companies, how they talk to the how does the system work? How much do people really talk to each other about all these issues?
Oh, a lot.
I mean, so the seed companies try to work with farmers?
Oh,
absolutely.
Or are
they saying, hey, you bought this corn, out of luck?
If I'm a farmer and I have the companies that I want to be my partners, my consultation group is my banker, my equipment dealer, my seed dealer, my fertilizer and chemical dealer, the guy that applies it for me, my livestock nutritionist. And most farmers I know that if they don't get the kind of interaction and support from any one of those, it's not just the product they're buying. If they don't get the technical knowledge and the support, they'll find somebody else. Then you bring in the Extension Service of Ohio State, whose folks Ann were just talking about that are there right beside the farmers. There are farm organizations like Ohio Farm Bureau and others. So the team is pretty big, and you rely on that team. One piece that I think we need to be paying very close attention to, unfortunately, farmers are very willing to exchange ideas and talk a lot about doing their business. But we're looking at some severe financial times ahead. The mental stress on farmers and farm families is huge. Unfortunately, I'm afraid it's going to continue to get bigger. And while farmers are willing to talk shop all day with the farmer next door, they're not going to go to their buddy and say, you know, I'm feeling down. I'm depressed. And so that's one of the things.
They may not even know they are.
They may not even know they are. And that's one of the things that we're trying to elevate is to get farmers who are rugged individuals to understand that sometimes it helps to talk. We hear a lot about suicide prevention lines now being provided by various organizations that assist farmers. Let's not let it get there. If you're feeling the pressure, find somebody to talk to. I know Ohio State is engaged in this, the State Department of Agriculture, farm organizations like ours. It's a piece of it we need to elevate. Because it's crucial that we let farmers know that there are some support mechanisms out there if you're feeling the pressure.
Yeah, endurance, is that a piece of what you're doing too?
That's exactly right. So at our website, go.osu.edu/agcrisis, there's a whole area that deals with farm stress. So the personal stress, just like Joe was talking about, but economic stress, farm management, and also workforce development. So all three of those areas. But really, it is important for these independent farmers to really talk, to even be with each other, because we're all in this together this year. To really talk about it. This is not something to really hold in. And that's important to get out to.
Ann Dorrance, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you.
Ann Dorrance is a professor of plant pathology at Ohio State in the College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Studies. Joe Cornelli, for the whole hour we had you, and I thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. I appreciate the attention to this issue. It's an important one.
Joe Cornelli, Senior Director of Corporate Communications for the Ohio Farm Bureau. We'll post that link to the go.osu.edu/agcrisis. If you want to check that out at wosu.org/allsides. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.